From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Tenderloin.
Treasure Island.
Richmond, California.
Coming up, we go inside the San Francisco County Jail to learn about a new program designed to prepare inmates for their release.
It seems like this time this is actually the first place I've been that somebody actually gives a damn about what happened when I got out of here.
Then we talk to San Francisco County's chief probation officer about how her department is working with inmates about to leave the system.
I clearly over the years saw a real need to improve the way that individuals were returned back into their community.
And we hear from a woman who's re-entering society after spending more than half her life behind bars.
I don't call myself a lifer. You continue to call yourself a lifer, you're going to think and act like a lifer.
What it means to re-enter. That's coming up today on Cross Currents. California has one of the highest prison populations in the country. Of the 2 million people serving time in U.S. prisons, more than 130,000 of them are incarcerated in our state in a system designed to house 80,000. In response to that overcrowding, the federal government has ordered the state to cut the prison population by about a quarter. All these people getting released need a clear plan for reentry. Right now, prison inmates get sent home with what's called gate money. That's $200 in their pocket, and a set of instructions for how to make appointments with probation officers on the outside. Within 3 years, over 60% of them, a huge percentage, end up back in custody. Here in San Francisco, one approach to reducing that rate is being tested in County Jail number 2.
I do not want to do what I think had been routine for decades in the criminal justice system, and that's throw spaghetti against the wall with rehabilitation programs to see what sticks and what doesn't.
That's San Francisco Sheriff Ross Mirkarimi.
I really want to work on specializing our approach so that everybody comes through our system is less likely to return.
Mirkarimi is talking about the Reentry Pod. It's a program designed for inmates sentenced in San Francisco County who are about to be released. KALW's Leela Day visited the pod and brings us this story.
Alvin Wagner is my name. Everybody calls me Chip.
Alvin Wagner is wearing orange pants, a baggy orange shirt, and orange slip-on shoes. He's an inmate here at County Jail No. 2 in San Francisco.
I've been on the street since I was 12. I've been in and out of prison since 1989.
Wagner's getting out of jail soon. He's one of the nearly 20 inmates here who are part of a program called the Reentry Pod. It's a pilot project designed to help inmates serving the last 30 to 90 days of their sentences. Through workshops and discussions, the idea is to help prepare them for life on the outside.
It seems like this time this is actually the first place I've been that somebody actually gives a damn about what happened when I got out of here.
We're in a large circular room with two levels. Bunk beds are in each room, and natural light filters in through small windows.
You'll notice there's no cell doors. It is open dormitory living. You know, every inmate has a drawer where all their personal belongings can be kept. Of course, everything in here is subject to search.
Chief Deputy Matthew Freeman walks me through the space. He's pointing out tables with checkerboards engraved in them. Men move around freely, except after lights out at 10 p.m. when they have to ask for permission to use the bathroom. A deputy is stationed in an elevated control area in the middle of the room.
Fights are very rare in this pod. One of the worst things you have is idle time, where there's nothing to fill that void of time. And then people are bored. And when they get bored, some weird things can start happening, and we don't have that problem in here.
Freeman says that the fact that so many of these men are due for release soon is one of the main reasons why they aren't getting into many fights. That and the fact that they're constantly kept busy here. Once a week, inmates work out in the county jail gym for 3 hours, the state requirement. And they take classes every day, ranging from nonviolence counseling to parenting courses to how to find housing. Freeman points to a room where about 15 men sit at desks arranged in a circle. It's a substance abuse class.
What's your integrity look like when nobody's watching you? It's your choice. Do you go and do right? Or do you don't go and do what's comfortable for you?
In another room, a class called Man Alive is starting.
Man Alive is a stop my violence program, you know, and it's a re-education group. Like, it's... We learn how to sit with our emotion. You
know, that's James Espinoza. He's a former inmate who's now a teacher. Tattoos run from his wrists all the way up to the top of his neck. He's got a dark mustache, ears heavy with piercings, and wears a pair of saggy jeans.
Sitting with being afraid, guys, is not a bad thing. But see, today I'm able to sit with that fear and process it and go, you know what? One, I'm not going to die, right? It's one of our agreements. I will not die. I can be afraid, and that's okay.
Espinoza's class is focused on how to live a nonviolent life once the men here get out of jail. It's something Espinoza knows firsthand.
You know, I've been a violent man. You know, I'm an ex-gang member. And I grew up with a lot of male role belief systems. You know, like men don't back down, men don't get punked, you know, men run the house. You know, I just grew up thinking that these were legitimate reasons to live. And I caught a domestic violence case in 2000, and I found this program. You know, I learned something outside of my element, and I just took to it, and, you know, I fell in love with it.
Outside the classroom, a representative from a program called No Violence Alliance talks to two inmates about their housing options. Upstairs in another office, a young inmate with a big smile on his face sits with an on-site probation officer. They're looking at a computer screen. A deputy tells me they're picking out college courses. It's a first step towards never being in this place again. In San Francisco, I'm Leela Day for Cross Currents.
What do you think about programs like San Francisco's Reentry Pod? What would help people stay out of prison once they're released? Let us know at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We'll try to get your thoughts on the air. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Jen Chien. Today, we're talking about reentry. California was recently granted an extension to meet the federal government's mandate to reduce its prison population. That extension came with specific requirements. For example, the federal court ordered the state to incorporate more programs like San Francisco's Reentry Pod to help prepare inmates for release. KALW's Holly Kernan sat down with San Francisco's chief adult probation officer, Wendy Still, to discuss some of the changes.
So we just took this tour of the reentry pod. Can you tell me, you worked for 30 years in California's prisons before taking over 4.5 years ago as the adult probation, chief probation officer. What did you see over that time that led you to decide we need to create this kind of reentry program?
Well, a main problem that I saw with the system grew from approximately 33,000 inmates up to about 170,000 inmates during the period that I worked for the California prison system. And we went from 12 prisons to 33 prisons. And there was such a high recidivism rate. It was about 77%. And the inmate failure was based upon the lack, in my mind, of readiness for and programs when the individuals are released from state prison and going home, right?
I mean, I don't know if people know this, but essentially somebody who's spent, say, 5 years in prison, 10 years in prison, is given $200 and a bus ride into their county.
Exactly. And they didn't, without any type of reintegration plan or reentry plan, and being that they had been away from their families, many of them have no social contacts or no place to go to once they're released, that there was a constant churning going in and out of the prison system. Out of those 170,000 inmates, about 120,000 there was a revolving door for. And so I clearly over the years saw a real need to improve
the way that individuals were returned back into their community, and also on the very front end of the system, put systems in place to prevent individuals from going to state prison in the first place. Look at developing programs for the prevention, because the solutions, these individuals are citizens of whatever city and counties that they come from. And so the solutions have to be there in order to, both from a prevention standpoint and a reintegration standpoint. And so working with this population for almost three decades, I really saw a need to help develop the transition back, almost a halfway back program. So prior to just releasing him into the community with the $200 and the bus ticket, right, is to develop a program so an individual can work on their education, they can work on employment readiness, they can address any kind of substance abuse issues they have, enroll them now into the Affordable Health Care Act, as well as then develop solutions for housing for them, since so many of them are unemployed and have no housing. And very quickly when they're released, if in fact they do not have some type of program in place, then those are the individuals that very quickly recidivate and commit new crimes.
And that's Wendy Sill. She's Chief Adult Probation Officer for San Francisco. I'm Holly Kern, and you're listening to Cross Currents. And we're talking about San Francisco's reentry pod, and also more largely about how to successfully reintegrate people who have been through the California's prison system back into our communities. California has a terrible track record in terms of recidivism. I think it was once as high as 77%, as you mentioned, and it's now like two-thirds of people go through this revolving door. How are you tracking the success of your program? How will you know, you know, that you've actually made a dent in those numbers?
Well, we're tracking all the individuals that actually go through the pod. And while most other counties have experienced an increase in their jail population, I'm very pleased to report that we have the jail population during this realignment time has dropped by 25%. Probation has a successful termination rate of 85% of our population in 2013. In 2013, probation in San Francisco also won the American Probation and Parole Association for our progressive leadership. That's the highest award that you can win. But in addition to that, we also have a very high successful completion for these who would have been parolees before. So we know that our numbers are working. The jail is at an all-time low, 25% lower. And this is after the state has released over 1,000 individuals back in the community.
Yeah. That's through realignment.
That you would have seen, we should have seen our numbers increasing. But because of the success rates that we're having, we're able to continue the success with this population, building on that model that we created.
So, Wendy, you worked in California prisons during the prison boom, essentially the era of mass incarceration. It seems, as somebody who's just an observer, it seems like there is a turning of the tide right now, a rethinking that this is not working, both in terms of the money, the actual dollar cost to society, and then the real emotional cost, the real human cost to society. Do you feel that change?
I absolutely do feel it, and the sentiment has changed in the legislature. I think with the citizens, very appropriately are demanding a better return on their investment of the criminal justice dollar. You know, that there have been billions of dollars invested in criminal justice systems all over the, you know, whether it's the state level or the county level. And if it was a business, you know, the CEOs would have been fired because of just the very poor, the very high recidivism, which is a failure rate. And so I think what across the state and across the country, people are realizing, no matter whether they're sitting working in the criminal justice, whether they're impacted by the justice system, or whether they're the public, is that public safety, you cannot improve and will not improve public safety by simply locking people up. Roughly, it's about $140 a day. And the individuals that you are locking up, for the most part, at least three quarters of them are coming back to the community. So it's more
the shift of focus is, how can we better prepare those individuals to be successful? And if they are successful, then that is going to improve public safety and reduce victimization.
That's San Francisco's Chief Adult Probation Officer, Wendy Still. She spoke with KALW's Holly Kernan. For more information on reentry, visit our website, wearekalw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Jen Chien. Reentering society after time behind bars is one of the most volatile times for former inmates. Probationary periods often involve mandated classes, regular visits with probation officers, and keeping detailed records of how you spend your time. It's time-consuming, and making mistakes can mean a return to prison. Judy Bell spent 26 years at the Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla before her release in 2013. She shares her story about reentering society in this piece produced by Leela Day.
My name is Judy Bell. I was born and raised here in San Francisco, California, predominantly from the Bayview area off of 3rd Street over by Candlestick Park. I would say overall, I had a lot of challenges because I was placed in different homes due to different things going on in my parents' life at that time. My mom, at one time, she was an addict, and my father was an alcoholic. Drugs was my downfall. It was crack, cocaine, and actually that beast, that demon got a hold of me in the beginning when it very first came out, which was the early 80s. So it was crack cocaine, and they used to call it Grimmies or Fry Daddies when you would lace it and sprinkle it over marijuana. So I used to smoke it that way. And then I got introduced to the bass pipe. I just did not know. I didn't know what I know now. I didn't know then. And I thought it was cool. You know, I thought I was being hip, smoking crack and running the streets of San Francisco and just living life on impulse. And my very first incarceration, meaning prison, was in 1988. And that's when I was convicted of second-degree murder. And the truth was that I did commit the crime. However, it was due to me and the lifestyle that I was living at the time. It was never intended for no one to be hurt. It's ironic because I did come from a very wealthy family. I realized I got caught up in the fast life versus being more grounded and disciplined, you know, with my family. So my sentence was 15 to life with the possibility of parole. I served 26 and a half years in prison. That was so unreal to me. I felt like I had detached from myself. I was no longer present. I couldn't even imagine that, you know, and then I also feel that a part of me numbed up so bad that nothing even mattered after my mom passed away and I was being taken away from my kids due to poor choices that I made at such a young age. I felt that nothing mattered no more. I'm gone. You know, it's negligent that what you did and someone lost their life due to it. That was very hard for me to sit with and come to terms with for a very long period of time. I was foolish. I was in my folly. So I don't feel that the system was wrong in the length of time they gave me. However, I do feel that I pretty much got it before the 26 years lapsed. I was just released in 2013. The happiest day of my life. I was given $200 gave money. $200 gave money and the property that I had I was told that I would be back. Some of the staff were like very negative about my release, but then there was also some that were very happy and encouraging me and wishing me well. It was an emotional day. I seen actually some staff with tears in their eyes of joy, though, you know, and it touched me just to see that. Just to be able to touch my children and run up and hold them, and my son just cried, my daughter cried. You know, I still have grandkids that I have not even met in person yet. Walden House is a recovery home for women returning back into society. You go through three phases of the program. You got orientation, main treatment, and then reentry. And in each phase of it, you remain, say, like 6 to 8 weeks. I have my own little lamp right there beside my bed. And it's homey. It's comfy for me, aside from the mold. I haven't had a bath in years. So to be able to just soak and close the door, and there's a little radio that I could turn on my jazz in there and just zone out and just total relax, you know, it's wonderful. Well, now we're in Bell's Cleaners, which is my family's business, and I'm getting ready to start my day working here.
The track of clothes. And I try not to go too fast when I roll it around because the power, it does what it does sometimes, but so I'll find his order by checking over here, right? On the rack, the towel, the clothing rack.
At one time, I was serving a life sentence, and that was the language that they used in that place to describe people that were serving time. They'd say, oh, she's a lifer, or she's a long-termer. So they pretty much, it was more or less like a jacket that was put on us, just being in the judicial system and in prison. And now, I don't call myself a lifer, but I know that even in prison, I had to stop using that terminology because for so long, you continue to call yourself a lifer, you're going to think and act like a lifer. And the majority of ones that do that don't really do anything to try to get out of prison. I am more than a conqueror. I am better than I was before. And I am starting over stronger. I'll be 50 this year. And it's a huge blessing because I'll be turning 50 in the free world.
Judy Bell is still working at her uncle's dry cleaning store and continues to live in the group home Walden House on Treasure Island. She will complete her reentry program next year and plans to move closer to family in San Francisco's Bayview District. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Lisa Carmack, Hana Baba, Lawrence Chan, Audrey Dilling, Sandia Dirks, Jeannie Duan, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ted Muldoon, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, Liza Veal, and Melanie Young. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel and produced by Leela Day. Our senior producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And because of your support, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. Bay Area pooches are finding themselves at the center of a years-long park use dispute.
The people who were behind this idea of stamping out the use of bikes and dog walking are really insensitive and ill-informed. about the meaning and use of a recreation area.
That's tomorrow on Cross Currents from KALW News. Today's local music is by Bay Area blues man Tommy Castro. This song is from his latest album, The Devil You Know. Castro says he challenged himself to add different sounds and new rhythms to this record while staying true to his core. Tommy Castro and the Painkillers are among the performers taking part in this year's Art and Soul Festival. The festival takes place Saturday and Sunday in downtown Oakland from noon to 6 p.m. both days. Check our website for links to more details. For Cross Currents, I'm Jen Sheehan.